Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Quinn walks it out to the slot. Shot scores! Matias Samuelson! Are you kidding me?
Pass to the bumper spot. That one back in front scores. Side of the net. Hot Wheels McLeod parked in the right spot. And the Sabres take a 2-0 lead. Here's Zucker left side. 2-on-1. Zucker with Hellas. Hellas shoots. Scores! The kid has done it again. Cuts to Hellenius. They mob him at the far boards.
Really excited about what our group did this year. The energy that our fans brought, the energy in the city, where we got to in the second half of the year. I think the playoffs with a group that had never been before, I felt really proud of. The battle in our team, the desperation, some of the situations they faced for the first time. I can tell you that I was proud of the way they handled it.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Hello, that was Lindy Ruff. And if my information is correct, this also is Lindy Ruff with us now on the Wester Hotline. Mike Shope and the Bulldog, thanks for listening. Lindy, we don't often have guests right away, so if you don't mind our starting the conversation off with a question that maybe we would have been talking about apart from your visit, what color should the end zones be? What do you think? What's your thoughts?
I have no idea. Let's have them green.
Green works for me. I like that, Bulldog. Green
same,
grass.
Same color as the... I'm not a really complicated guy, so let's stick with... I mean, I know the Bills are, really got some red, they got some blue, but let's stay green.
I got to tell you, the fan sentiment has been very strong for nostalgia. It always is with both the teams here that we talk about regularly, Lindy. So red, people want red because of the 90s. And I saw Picoelli put out a poll, and there's four choices. And I like the blue one best. I think the blue one looks best with the logo at midfield, and so I voted blue.
Agree to disagree. Yeah. You and Lindy again at odds.
I got to be honest. I didn't know there was a debate about the end zone color.
That's
Lindy. There's a
that
debate about
well of you.
There's a debate about everything.
That's
otherwise
well
we'd
of
be
you.
Out of jobs.
Oh, sure.
I don't think we need you to care about that. So that's fine. This is so cool. I mean, I know the occasion today is that the Sabres and WGR are continuing their relationship. I meant to look this up, and I'm not that good at this, so I didn't. But it's possible that Sabres games were on these airwaves when you were drafted. Like, there's a long... I know Channel 2 then had the games with Ed and Pat Hannigan and those guys. Like, it's a long time ago now, but there's a pretty good history between us.
Yeah, what a tremendous relationship. And congrats to everybody there getting the deal done and having you guys back and... I'm looking forward to it. You guys have been a great sports crew, and it's been a great relationship. Let's keep it going.
Is there a particular time you would be willing to share that we drove you crazy? Whether that was like most of your visits have been with the morning guys, but like they must have made you mad a couple times.
No, you know, the fondest memory going back was actually driving to the studio and being with Bulldog. I don't know, Bull. I don't know if you can remember the year, but it probably late 90s. But we did that.
Yeah.
I don't even know what night, maybe a Tuesday night or something like that. I'd drive in and we'd get through it. So, I got a lot of respect on, for you guys and what the job you're trying to do and, find something to talk about. And there's controversy every day. And, whether you win or lose, there's. We try to make it interesting for you, for sure. So, did you bug me at times? Damn right you
Let's
did.
Let's hope. If we didn't, I mean, we should be replaced.
Yeah, yeah.
That's clear.
I remember you coming in like that. That's you did. I think a regular gig with Kevin Sylvester for a time, and I probably filled in a few times because Kevin and I have been co-workers on and off. Yeah, it's been off for a very long time now, but early on we were together at BEN, then he was gone for a while, and then we were together over here. But anyway, yeah, those were days. Elmwood Avenue, WBEN, that old nighttime show. We did plenty of that. Yeah, we all go back, man. Like it's one of the things, Lindy. Like it was so important that the team broke through last year like they did with you as the head coach. Because I don't mind telling you, I don't know if this will land badly, but when you came back, the state of the franchise had been so damaged that I didn't want it to damage how people felt about you, because you're such a beloved figure in the history of the franchise. Like Mike said, drafted, played here, coaching career, and then on to other places, and then now back here. And I for me, selfishly, the admiration I have for you, I needed something good to happen, and thankfully it did.
Yeah, and by any means, it wasn't easy, as you recall, with the way we started. And, you know, I've gone through last year, and I go through early on all the stuff that Darlene dealt with, and then Norris getting hurt in the, you know, the first game versus the Rangers, and Benson dealing with an ankle injury. And, you know, once we got through all that, we, you know, the vision of what I thought the team could be really, really came around. And we got some tremendous play, and we had a lot of players that took big steps. And understanding that, again, we got a year coming up where everybody in our division, in our conference, they all think they're playoff teams. And there's teams that have really think they've improved, and we know at the same time that we have to improve, that guys have to take another step forward, and it's not going to be an easy task.
Lindy, if this isn't too close to the same question, just wonder how you feel about your team right now versus a year ago. I mean, you always have sounded very optimistic. That's how coaches tend to sound, you know, about their team, like in public especially. For me, this moment here leading into training camp is very different than last year, because last year it was all kind of just like, all right, you got to show me first. Now you had last year, and expectations are higher. Like, maybe you felt that optimistic last year that you might get to, I mean, 109 points in first place, I don't know, but the season you had versus now. I mean, how is the job or your outlook on things different, if it is at all, from a year ago?
I don't think the outlook has changed that much. Just knowing that there's a lot of work to do, that we've got some players that stepped into our lineup and played extremely well, and I think they're just scratching the surface. And, you know, I can go to players like, you know, Samuelson and Quinn, and then you can go to Oslin, a guy that was missing that I had a long conversation with yesterday that is in town. He looks great. He's been skating. Is Kulik. You know, and then Helenis stepped in the playoffs, and he was a real good player for us. So, you know, I'm excited about where we got to, knowing that, you know, everybody's got to take another step, that, you know, shortened the summer, which is always a good thing.
Yeah.
Less time to train. Most of the guys are back in town right now, and I'm excited. You know, for the most part, all the players are anxious and ready to go.
How are you feeling about the veterans that you did lose? Because it feels like, you know, significant guys, Tuck, an assistant captain, Byram, somebody who really helped make you guys go back there. And it seems like you're maybe going to be counting on, as it stands, younger guys to fill all that in. And there's some pretty big shoes to fill there.
Yeah, for sure. I think when you look around the league, the good teams, the teams that, you know, have a great year, there's always one or two players that have to move on and make room for a younger player. I think Carolina is probably the greatest example, that a lot of good players have come in, a lot of good players have left, and they remain consistent, and they believe in the players they have. The players you mentioned, Tuck and Bo, great players for us. We're a big part of our regular season, big part of the playoffs. I still think that our defense is the strength of ours. Our top four, you know, that you look at right now, and we got a guy like Zellweger who's stepping in. We got Crevier, another big guy that will be stepping in. I feel that is still going to be our strength. Are we going to miss him? We are going to miss him. But it's another opportunity. I think that Owen Power took a big step, is ready to, you know, step in and be a huge factor in the way we play and in all assets of our game, whether it's penalty killing, power play. I thought where he got his game to the end of the regular season and playoffs was fantastic. And when I talk about Tuck, I have a lot of admiration you know, what he's done for the franchise, what he's done for the team. But feeling that, you know, a guy like Doan can play more, Benson can play more, that we've got Quinn, Hellenius, Austin. We've got a list of players that are ready to take that next step and assume a greater leadership role and a playing role in a lot of different situations.
With Lindy Ruff, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here on WGR, on the occasion of the station and the team jointly announcing a continuing partnership, and the games will be on WGR. And you're nice, by the way, Lindy, to take questions that are not about us. So we appreciate that. So I've never played high-level sports, need I say so, but I've met hundreds of people that have. And most of my experience with athletes is they don't want to look back. You know, like there's not that much value in it necessarily. I wonder, though, respectfully about yourself. I mean, you've been in the game for almost 50 years professionally. And, you know, you're coming up on the top names in the history of the sport in terms of wins and games coached. Do you think about that ever? Like, can you find time? Is it even in your interest? Or is it something that you have an instinct for to be reflective? Or do you sort of fend that off and just think about the next day or the next season? How do you go about that?
Well, I think the one thing is I've been humbled by the opportunity I've been given in many places. My first opportunity here playing and then coaching, and now this second opportunity to come back and coach. And not many guys get that opportunity, so I've been blessed in that regard. I think I was blessed to play the game for 12 years in the NHL and then a year in the American League, a year in the International League, and stay healthy enough through that to, you know, to play the game. So every day I'm thankful for, you know, the path I've taken. I don't look at, well, you're here in your career or you're with this guy and whatever guy did what. I get a lot of satisfaction of seeing players grow and develop and become really good players. And I think when I step up this year, I look at some of the names that I mentioned previously. I want to see those players again continue to grow and make this a really good hockey team. My goal is to have this be a really good, consistent hockey team that we're right there year after year. So I don't want to look back at last year. I don't want to look back at, you know, my coaching career or my playing career. I just want to look forward to this year coming up and make sure that with this opportunity, we can become that team that consistently, a lot like the Bills are now, playoff team every year now for years. That's what we need to become.
Lindy, this might be a similarly themed question to the one that Mike just asked you, but I'm curious if this maybe is in a little bit of a different lane. Do you ever sit back? Maybe this would be something that would happen when you talk with people you maybe no longer work with or even played with in the past, just how much the game has evolved from the point where you entered in the late 70s or 80s and to where it is now. I mean, there's been a lot of different iterations, I feel like, of the league. And I've been fond of, since, I don't know, the last 5, 6, 7 years, maybe a little longer, feeling like year over year, I feel like the league has never been a better watch because of the skill and talent that there is now, that I think gets more opportunity than it ever has. And I was curious for your kind of overall, it's a very much a 30,000-foot view, and I don't
like
know how
too.
Ready you are to talk about, but there's been a lot. You've been around. I mean, I'm sorry to say you've been through a lot.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. Where the game has come from to where the game is at now, the talent, the training, the skill in the game, some of the changes that have been made in the game. You know, you remember when we came out of lockouts in 04, 05, or yep. 05, 06, whatever it was, and they said no more hooking, no more holding, and we had an unbelievable team. We went through camp knowing that if, you know, we could play these four lines and the likes of a Finneganoff and you name it, we had high skill. We had Derek Roy. We had all kinds of players. We had all kinds of skill. And I think one of the first regular season games, we had like 12 power plays. But just to change that to allow the skill to perform at their utmost has made a big difference in the game. I'll just say right now, I probably wouldn't be able to play in today's game because I was really good at hooking and holding. and latching on to guys and slowing them down. And, you know, you cover your defenseman, you stick your stick through his legs, and you hang on to him. And that was never, ever called. So today's talent, the way they train, the number of hours they spend in the summer, like it's a 12-month game now where the game where I came from in the 70s was you finished the season, took a little bit of time off, you got ready. But I think that's almost every sport, you know, has developed along the way. Our sport, with the speed of the players, you know, when you look at, I look at last year, Beck Melanstein being the fastest guy in the league, and he's primarily playing on our, you know, our fourth line. That tells you a lot about the game right there. You know, a guy that can skate like that and can end up with a 24-point-some-mile-an-hour skate inside of a game. The game is fast. The game is skilled. And it has changed a lot from no red line to, you know, moving the line out from the end boards to giving more room to operate below the goal line. So there's been a lot of changes.
No red line was an idea, if I remember correctly, that you championed back 20 years ago. Right, Lindy? Is that correct?
Correct, yeah. I actually was, for a while, was a proponent of trying to make the nets a little bigger. And I think the alternative to that was what the league has done with the goaltenders and cutting down their pads, cutting down the blocker. You know, having a mechanism in place to make sure that goaltenders aren't overcooking their equipment from the size of their pants to everything. Everything is monitored now, which in reality has made the net bigger. And it has made it, you know, where all of a sudden scoring is back in the game and the skill is operating at a high level. Because there for a while, the scoring was, it was getting pretty tight. It was, and I'm going to say this honestly, I thought it was a little bit for a while I was coaching, a little bit of a boring game. Until they loosened everything up.
Well, yes. I mean, Bulldog's question runs deep. I mean, it's been very different over like waves of changes since the 70s and the 80s, and then even since, you know, 2006. But I never thought it was going to be possible. I thought if they don't make the nets bigger, there's just no hope for this because everybody's too good. The goalies. Bulldog's kid. Lindy, I don't know if you know him. He works here now, like just like a top player. And like, what do you do against this guy? You sort of sit down to watch a game, and here's a 6'7" goalie who takes up the whole net. Like, I don't know what to do here. I'm just going to have to try to lob it over his head. I don't even know. Well, it's great to see. It's great to see, and it's great to see the Sabres line up with, you know, much like 20 years ago with your team's speed and.
Yep. You know, all that said, Lindy, it did, you know, I was talking for a long time when I posed that question, so I had to shut it down at some point. It's a problem I have sometimes. But the other piece of that is I feel like a team like Florida the last few years, Tampa, I think, had a mind to try to push you guys around a little bit. That famous 8-7 game late in the season felt like them sort of like, all right, you young hotshot punks, we're going to show you what's what. I feel like it's sort of swung. There's still a ton of speed and skill, but I feel like the physical part of the game has sort of, I don't know if they've broken down the door entirely, but it feels like they've gotten, it's coming back into the game, it feels like.
Yeah, you know, I think there's an element of physicality that you need with your team, and you still need it. I think, that was really, you just mentioned a game that I think was one of my favorite games of the year. You know, we jumped off to the big lead, 4-1. We give up that lead. You know, there was lots of chaos, fighting inside the game, and all of a sudden, you're looking at a game that's tied, and then we get a power play, and we go ahead in the game, and the game ends up being 8-7. But Tampa does have a little reputation for, you know, trying to bully, and, you know, I think our guys answered the bell, which was great to see. And, you know, I think it was a question that was always asked. I know we had a couple of issues the year before, but I think, you know, our leadership on our team came to the forefront And I think we answered almost every, you know, every question we needed to answer this year. And we really grew as a group, which, you know, that's all you want to see as a coach.
Before we let you go, Lindy, so this has been something that's sort of like been in the back of my mind for many years. Often you would do our morning show and we would talk to Darcy Regeer in the afternoon, like once a week, Bulldog pretty much at the arena on a Friday night. We talk, Darcy would come by, and I've known him since I got to Buffalo, back to Buffalo 26 years ago. And finally, Lindy, after many years, I mustered the strength to ask him for his phone number. So I could, you know, if I needed to know something, maybe he trusted me and he would tell me. So he gives me a number, and then some other period of time goes by because I'm still sort of bashful, and I call it, and I'm on Maple Road, just about to pull into this facility, and a different voice answers the phone, and I'm like, "Hi, Darcy?" And the other person says, "I think you have the wrong number. I think it was you." Mike Gilbert said to me once that you, that was like a prank where you guys would give each other's number to people. Is that true? Can I find out finally after all these years?
I don't believe that's true.
Okay.
I find it, but our numbers were so close that I could easily see that happening.
Honest mistake? Is that going to be your story? Honest mistake?
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I mean, it's a great bit.
Right?
If it were the idea, it's a great bit.
I've never thought to ask Mike if you know you dialed correctly. Like, I imagine you triple-checked, right? I mean,
I might have typed it in wrong. I don't know who I was talking. I thought I was talking to you, but maybe not. I am now.
Darcy, a lot of credit. I'll give Darcy a lot of credit if he gave you my number. I find that pretty funny.
I told Bulldog right before we came on with you, I wrote it down, so now I have it. I can see it right here.
I want you to try to call it. I want to see if it's because I've got the same number.
Let me see if I have that number in my phone. Wow. I'll actually look. I probably deleted it. Yeah. I might have deleted all my contacts in that moment. I was so, you know... Yeah. Nervous.
Boy, the level of sleuthing that is happening here is unprecedented.
All right.
Well, Lindy, I hope everything goes well. Continued, you know, best of luck. And try not to be freaked out if my 24, soon-to-be 25-year-old kid starts asking you questions on the morning show. Because it's still very weird for me that he works here. And I don't know. It does go by.
He's following in some great footsteps. So good for him. And I'll look forward to talking to him.
Thank you, Lindy. Look forward to the season. Can't wait. Thanks for your time.
You got it, gentlemen. You're welcome. Bye now.
Bye. 716.
Yeah, don't do that.
No, I was going to say my number. But then he hung up, so he doesn't need it. Pretty sure.
He knows how to reach you.
He should. He can pull rank anytime he wants.
Figure that out. Yeah.
All right. So the Sabres will be back on the station this year, and that's exciting.
And I'm happy for everyone, but especially Brian and Paul.
Oh,
that's their primary job here. And Brian, to have them finally have a successful season after all of those seasons that they missed the playoffs that he presided over, I thought it would have been really, really depressing if they left after that and were somewhere else. And Brian is just sort of like, You're seriously? I've been almost 20 years of this.
I waited this long.
And now they're good, and now they're, come on. So good for, especially good for those two men.
Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Paul Hamilton will join us later. In between now and then, Tom Telesco, former GM of the Chargers and Raiders. We have another announcement to make that he's connected to. And St. Francis, Buffalo, Buffalo guy. And I heard him on Sirius XM the other night, and then a certain other thing happened, and like here we are going to be talking to Tom Telesco today. So that'll be great. That's coming up at 4 Eastern. Green End Zones, Lindy. Obviously, he's thought about it a lot, and he planted his flag. Keep them green. What do you think? 803-0550 for us. We'll be right back.
Oh, one power took a big step. He was ready to step in and be a huge factor in the way we play and in all assets of our game, whether it's penalty killing, power play. I thought where he got his game to the end of the regular season and playoffs was fantastic. And when I talk about Tuck, I have a lot of admiration for, you know, what he's done for the franchise, what he's done for the team. Feeling that, you know, a guy like Doan can play more, Benson can play more, that we've got Quinn, Hellenius, Austin. We've got a list of players that are ready to take that next step.
I just remembered after hearing Lindy's voice again to check to see if I have the other number.
The old number. See if it matches.
No way. No. I would have. I might have even thrown my phone out of the car after that. Just like
it's so long
delete,
ago.
Delete.
15,
don't make this
probably
mistake
like
again.
15 phones ago. I mean, it might have been
a couple.
Would have been like iPhone 1 or something. Like
when
that.
Was Darcy fired?
13, November of 13.
Okay.
Right? Or is it 14? 13. What's EJ Manuel's? When does EJ Manuel beat the Carolina Panthers with a last second pass to Stevie Johnson? Is that the 13 season? I think it is. Because there's a tweet that, like, back when I don't see bots anymore, which I guess I'm grateful for. I know it's one thing that seems like, at least not as prominently as I used to. There used to be randomly, like, some sort of some bot accounts would just grab a tweet from 6 or 10 years ago out and favorite it, and you'd get a notification like some, you know, XYZ with maybe a naked lady picture liked this tweet. Like, what? And there's one from like the day after that game, the Carolina game that Manuel brought them from behind late to win. Like the next day is here comes Pat LaFontaine and Ted Nolan is back. And all of that happened. And that is when Darcy went. Lindy was already gone, of course, by then. So I think, is that November of 13 or November of 14? I don't remember which year. 13. It's got to be, because Stevie Johnson's not here in 14. Sammy Watkins is.
I think Regeer and Ralston are fired at the same time, which would be a year later. No? No. No, you're right.
I think I have
said it.
It's November of 13.
They are fired at the same time, if I'm right, and then Nolan arrives.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
13. Yeah. That's right. I think you're right. I was at a game early that season, and it was bleak. Before that had happened, it was bleak. I want to say it was against the Kings, but... Yeah. All right. Well,
I don't have
the number.
I'm really glad that when you asked Lindy that question about if, you know, do you remember a time where we really annoyed you, that he didn't realize that we were talking about how he he needed to be fired. And then like 8 minutes, it was just like today, except today we're talking to Lindy Ruff. At like 3 o'clock, we started the show and we're talking about how this has to happen. And like 10 minutes into the first segment, the news broke that he had been fired.
And that's the year before.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Ruff goes first.
Right.
And then Ralston. And then the next year, it's Ralston.
That
and
whole
then it's
change happens.
Nolan.
And then eventually Tim Murray is brought in and yeah, all that.
Tim Murray. Listen to these names. Oh, my God.
Know,
the show has
right?
never sounded older.
Talking about people we enjoyed talking to. I mean, Tim Murray was always a ride talking to him.
Yeah. I do think, I mean, this came up with Ruff. I mean, I think it's incredible. I think the league largely has lucked into it that the games are so electric, or they can be. It's not a time and place where... Really, is anybody complaining about the state of hockey? I mean,
no, the game,
I don't think
the game
so.
On the ice. No, I mean, I feel like those conversations are 10 years ago.
But how did they
more.
Get there? Without making the nets bigger, without certain gimmicks.
I think I would. I'm not sure how much you said like you want to say like maybe they just sort of fell into it.
Yeah. I do.
I just know my experience, I mean it's still very limited, but it's more experience than maybe the average person has. Like even watching, you know, 16, 17 and 18 year olds play, when I went to the first Sioux St. Marie Greyhounds training camp that Owen was invited to. So September of 2018. And watched their coaching staff running practices at a training camp for OHL hockey and making them start over and redo drills every time someone just threw the puck aimlessly off the glass. And I like the coaching in the sport right now at those levels is predicated on what I think, you know, they're expecting to need to have, what guys will need to do to play in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And it became like you better be able to skate like crazy. Defenseman, forward, doesn't matter. Skate, handle the puck, do something smart with it. You can't just high and hard off the glass ain't going to get it done anymore. You're just giving it back to them. You got to try to do, of course, there's exceptions, but like mostly that was really eye-opening to me. And I feel like from those levels, it's not the lower levels of the sport, it's the higher levels of amateur hockey, that I thought I saw evidence of a change. It was just like you got to handle the puck. You got to be able to do something positive with it or you are not going to play. And I think eventually that bred a generation of players that are more skilled. There's more of a emphasis on that part of the game, I think, coming up. And maybe that even stems from the lockout of 2004-05 and what the game was like in 2005 and 2006 and moving forward. That again, those level of junior level coaches, and believe me, it wasn't across the board. I'm sure there were teams out there in the OHL and in all junior leagues that were still trying to muscle you up and, you know, clutch and grab and intimidate you and push you around, because you're still talking about teenagers that maybe could be susceptible to that. But I think the teams that were successful starting then emphasized possession of the puck and skating and skill. And I just think that has led to, you know, in the sport itself, again, all the developmental levels of it, there's just so much more emphasis on all programs. I would think at this point, any amateur hockey program has a power skating option. There are skills coaches. There are, you know, how to shoot, how to drag, and all of it, I think, has just grown in leaps and bounds. From say 20 years ago, which is what we're talking about when we're talking about 2005-06. So that's my best guess at it. I mean, I'm sure, surely it is not the most informed opinion about it. But I feel like I witnessed like that sort of starting to percolate.
It was really a pleasure to talk to Ruff. We have in our position, not simply the luxury of the privilege of doing that, but also like, when we get Lindy, it's like the off season. It's once in a while. It's years in between sometimes. And I don't feel any pressure to ask him about line combinations or who's going to be the next goalie, you know, to start the next game. Like, it's more relaxed. And that makes for a very, you know, nice and good conversation. I felt if he didn't say it directly, he showed a real soft spot for that 2005-06 team. And we have that as fans. I mean, he really sort of almost sounded like he was lighting up thinking about Max and Roy and the names. Yep. He started to mention the names. And then he said how it was a question about like the evolution of the game in the NHL and a game where they had 12 power plays, whatever game that might have been. I was at that first game that year.
Me
against
too,
the
Islanders. Yep.
And the Islanders got a penalty for not – like being in the somebody got thrown out of the faceoff dot twice, and that was delay of
that
game.
That was a thing. Yeah,
you've never seen that in forever, if it's even still in the books. But you got a penalty for twice on the same faceoff attempt being thrown out. Whatever, you know, it was called. I'm looking at the box score from that game, and there were 6, 10, 13, 18 penalties called. That's the first game of that season.
Were any of them declined?
They were not declined, but there was nothing coincidental, and they were all minors. There were 18 minors
My God.
Called that night, I think 10 against New York, and 8 against Buffalo.
I mean, that is potentially, I mean, I know there probably were goals scored on some of those, so they all didn't run the full 2 minutes, but like that's 36 minutes out of a 60-minute game that is special teams.
But it was the so-called point of emphasis, like we're, yes, right. we're not going to let you hook and hold, like right. Lindy said.
Even you just get your stick, you almost didn't even have to be impeding the player. If you put your stick parallel to the ice in front of the player at all, you were getting called. You just got your stick on the body. That's it. Interference. Yeah, it was very, very strict. And I do, you know, that has slid, I think, over the years, which I think is good. Because I, as much as I think it needed to happen the way it did, and, you know, maybe overcorrect and then sort of come back to like a more reasonable level. But I don't think you get the reasonable level without the overcorrection to begin with, right? Yeah. So you had to go out there and get 18 power plays in a game or 18 penalties called in a game and then just bring it back and find maybe the sweet spot. So, you know, I think they have largely, I think the sport, and I said it when we were talking a little bit. I don't think the sport, I've been, and you know, you've been in here with me since I started saying it. I don't even know. Is it 10 years ago? Maybe longer? Like, it's never been better to me. And I still feel that way. I think it's the game is just in a very healthy place from a performance standpoint and an entertainment standpoint. No, they're all not brilliant. You know, I mean, it's a long season. There's going to be some dog-ass games out there. It just happens.
I think it's been true for a few years now.
But it's definitely something that's been going on for a while. And I you know, to everyone's credit, however it happened, I think they got to a very good place.
They got lucky. You were at that game.
That Islander game, yeah. Yeah. I remember the play I was just describing, the stick parallel to the ice and just get – I remember Briere drawing a penalty on a play. I mean, I can still kind of see it. Like, we were at one end. I was at one end. I don't know where you were.
I was in the press box.
I was at, okay. I maybe was in the suite. I don't know. I was watching from an end. And I just could still see Briere coming down the right side around the faceoff circle and the stick going on him. And like the arm goes up. And like, there you go. Anyway.
Three Islanders that night would play for the Sabres or had.
Had or would?
Okay. Two had, one would. Third one's tough. They're all a little bit tough. I think you'll get one. 05-06 season opener, okay. Right out of the canceled season.
Is Kalaposo the one who, was he there yet?
Nope.
Too early for him? Yeah, that makes sense. He's not that old.
October of 05. Maybe it's more, but I don't see anybody else on here that had a Saber chapter. One scored.
Was Pekka still there?
Nope.
No. Okay. Because that's 01 he goes, right? The offseason of 01 after they lost to Pittsburgh. Then he got traded and all that. Okay.
Yep.
So he's gone from there by then. I don't.
I think he's an Oiler.
That's correct.
Finals.
That's correct. He was on that team. Yes. I'm not. I'm just going to be stuck in the mud here.
Miro.
Okay. Sure.
Because you can think of him. You can see him in the playoffs the next year.
That's right.
For the Islanders.
Right.
Žitnik played for the Islanders and scored a goal in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Your buddy.
My favorite. I love
Žitnik. I don't see him on the Islanders at all.
No.
Mark Parrish.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be really tough.
That would be tough. He was the one who came to the Sabres.
After.
When? I mean, that was only for a minute.
Yeah.
Mark Parrish, naming some guys in here. Cup of coffee. I mean, barely. Mark Parrish, 2011. Two games. That's a good one. That's a good one. We have Tom Telesco, former NFL GM and Hamburg, Buffalo native, joining us here at the top of the hour. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, Paul Hamilton later as well. This is WGR.